This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Brock, I feel like you're in, like, traveling in Europe or something like that where it's midnight.
And Brock Rom.
I got it. First thing we need to do is we got to do another clap.
Welcome to episode 11. We're diving into motion graphics in this one. Layers, curves, text, where to start, and how to think about creating graphics. We'll discuss my journey starting as a videographer and building the skill set year over year to where I am today.
3, 2, 1.
Giddy up.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I haven't really thought about it, but like I'm in a closet right now, and so I can't see daylight. And then I look at Justin, and he's over in like Asia. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Okay, so today's episode, we're going to talk about something that every team has to deal with in some way, shape, or form. Some teams are better at it than others. Some teams have more assets to throw at it than others. I am terrible at it. And that's motion graphics. Justin is our resident motion graphics expert. It's been fun to watch him go from what I would consider to be kind of where I'm at, which is a motion graphics novice, to a motion graphics pro over the past, what would you say, Justin, 10 years or so? You've been working on it?
Yeah, you can use pro loosely here, I guess.
I've seen your reel. It's pretty pro.
So, about 5 years, really hardcore 5 years.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little motion graphics today. Again, this is really Justin's realm. I used to dabble in it some. I know a little bit of After Effects. I know Garrett used to dabble in it some. I don't know how much he does nowadays. He's shaking his head. He's making a weird face with his nose that indicates not much. So I think the easiest place to start on all this is Justin. We talked about it setting this up, but your journey from you know, where you were with motion graphics early on in your career to where you are now, what made you decide, oh, I need to be a better motion graphics artist?
Because I wasn't good. It was something that I enjoyed doing, though. When I was in Chicago and I used to watch Big Ten Network and watch some games on Saturdays and some of that, I'd actually pause and go frame by frame on my DVR back and forth to try and see how they brought on a graphic. So I've always had an interest in wanting to learn how to do some of it. And my skills and my taste didn't line up at all. My taste was way better than my skills. So I'd always had an interest, and I had developed, you know, being on the website of things, I kind of had a little bit of free rein when I was out of Illinois and when I got in with the Bears. I had a little bit more latitude and I had to do things quickly. And I saw an opportunity where in some departments you have somebody who's specifically, you know, specialized. And we've talked a little bit about that with our different roles. And I was not specialized at all. I was kind of a one-man band. So when I had to turn around a press conference, I had to also do the lower thirds for those. And I figured out, you know, playing with After Effects and doing some different things that I really enjoyed, and had this ability to create a little bit more graphics on top of the videos and go from there. And I just started getting into it slowly and just really started attacking it, watching Andrew Kramer's tutorials and some of that on Video Copilot, and just starting to understand how all of that worked and combining it. And when I really started to get into it is when Premiere and After Effects could start to talk to each other through Dynamic Link. And that's really where I started to take off. I was like, okay, I can see this as a great opportunity going forward, that, you know, design, assets, motion graphics, and video will do kind of blend together, and I need them both for my job to be able to do it quickly, and how I can take that and expand on it. And then I just really engrossed myself in it and started expanding from there.
What would you say was the biggest asset for you when you were going down that path and you really wanted to take that leap?
Desire, I guess. I think is probably a big part of it, is that I wanted to do it for me personally. I enjoyed it, but I guess the one part I probably also left out, when I got to Boston, I got in as a digital videographer, and I was shooting and editing, and that was my primary job. And so creating motion graphics allowed our content to be sellable too. So there's that other value add, in addition to just being a shooter editor, I was able to create more value for sponsorships and, to be able to sell the content.
So let's get a little bit more technical. When did you first realize how important the keyframe graph editor was in After Effects?
So let me tell you this story. I was traveling with the team when I worked for the Celtics. This is about 6 years ago when I first got there in 2014. I was on the plane, and in my free time when we were flying, I obviously didn't have anything to shoot or edit because we were flying to a game, and I would shoot and edit and turn around after that. But when we were on the plane, I started playing around in After Effects and was just trying to create something. I was trying to use the circles, trying to use the parquet pattern and play around with creating a new lower third and designing a look and feel. And I didn't really know exactly what I was doing. Actually, one of the guys that worked for NBC Sports Boston as their graphics guy saw me doing that, and we kind of struck up a friendship that we still have today, which is cool. I really got into feeling like I wasn't making things look like they did on TV. There was no dynamism in any of my graphics. They all felt kind of flat. It was the generic easy ease. I knew how to do the easy ease. I had no idea about the graph editor until I took a School of Motion class called Animation Boot Camp. And that was the big point of that boot camp, was talking about how to create more real life movements. So follow physics. If something is going down in the screen, it's faster than it is when it's going up. And that really opened my eyes to a ton of different things, even outside of animation, just how to see the world in a totally new way. And I feel like that really helped translate for me even over into video from animation, and kind of played off of each other.
How have you seen, you know, kind of this skill set that you've developed over the last, you know, 5-10 years become more and more important to your role, you know, over time? How much have you been able to specialize kind of in this?
I've started to specialize a little bit more, obviously taking on a little bit of a manager role also takes quite a bit of my time. But just backing off of some of the shooting and editing, we've added a couple of people to our team who focus on some of those aspects, and that has helped me transition a little bit better too. But the biggest challenge is seeing something that doesn't look quite right. Like, I know Brock brought that up before. You can, when you share with somebody outside of what you're doing, whether it's graphics or video, people can tell when something doesn't quite look right, but they don't necessarily have the ability to tell you why. And that's one of the things that I've really noticed and tried to expand on and work on from a manager role, being able to help everybody else see when a graphic doesn't quite look right and help them understand what we can do to improve it. But my, you know, going back to what I said about value, just being able to have a sponsorship come in, it's like, okay, well, we need a title card. Let's do a lower third, and be able to do that all in house is a big benefit. And we have a small team. There's 6 of us, right, that work on the video and now graphics side as well, that we're in charge of doing quite a few things. And that is kind of central to where the motion graphics come in, though, is because we're adding value to a sponsored deal.
I was going to ask more about the creative process, because I think when I first started in college in this, I think it was Derek Sassman sat me down as a freshman. And at Husker Vision, you didn't get hired back automatically after your first year. You had to be rehired. And Derek Sassman sat me down and told me a lie that was, they're not going to hire you back unless you know After Effects. And it was the best lie anybody's ever told me. So I went to the bookstore and bought an actual book. It was a thing that happened in 2007.
Was it by Trish and Chris Myers?
I don't remember. It was an After Effects CS3 book. And I went through that whole thing, and I did like every project in it. And I learned After Effects, and I remember telling Kirk and saying, oh, I heard you didn't hire people back who didn't know After Effects. So I went and learned After Effects. He goes, oh, that's great. That's not true, but that's great. It's a good skill to have. But what I struggle with is I know After Effects fairly well as a program. I am a terrible visual designer. I'm a terrible graphic designer. I don't have an eye for it. Like most people, I can sit there, I can tell when something is well designed, you know, versus not. I know aesthetics I like, but I can't recreate them. What has that process been like for you? Do you feel like now you're more of a graphic designer than you were when you started this whole process?
100%. And that's the challenge, right? The way that people typically get into doing motion graphics has been one of two ways. Either start with more of a graphic design background and add in the motion elements to it, or you start video with some motion and try and work in the graphic elements to it. And now, you know, schools are offering motion design programs and some of that. So I think younger professionals probably have some of that. My background, obviously coming from the video side, where I really excel is in my timing and pacing and in the animation side of things. My biggest struggle has been design. So after I took that animation boot camp, I got out of that and was like, great, I can animate, but I have nothing to animate because I don't have assets to create. I've taken five classes from School of Motion, and the second class I took because of that is design boot camp. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I am really good as a designer, but I've over the last 5 years have really developed some skills and understanding, and what, you know, just inspiration, just seeing how other people have done things to be able to build the skill sets and understanding placement, size, and some of those kinds of things to help communicate. Because at the end of the day, you are communicating, and you have to find a way to help them understand what that message is. And sometimes you're taking a circle and making the circle represent something to be able to convey that message. And sometimes you're using text and different elements. So it's thinking about it in that way. And I think that's honestly one of the things that I have developed the most, not necessarily just in the design sense, but understanding what purpose everything is serving to be able to communicate through the motion graphic of what you're trying to accomplish and how everything fits together so that it doesn't just look pretty, that there's intention behind all of it. And that intention does have to come through. And sometimes it's just me feeling like there's an intention and attaching an intention to it, so that when I create a graphic, I'm like, well, this is saying this, so I'm going to make it move in such a way that it does make it feel a little bit more organic that way.
How often are you working on, you know, templates that maybe someone from your graphics department has sent over and animating, and how much are you creating just from scratch on your own design at this point, like percentage-wise?
Let me use something as an example. We have the motion graphics package that I built. I built that based off of the parquet pattern that our graphic designer had built and was using in a lot of our collateral. So I took that and said, okay, well, if the parquet pattern is really our base, I'm going to make the motion graphics package for a lot of our sponsored assets, our game day assets, and some of that. I'm going to make that the central element to where I'm using court assets to be able to showcase our team. And that comes through with lower thirds. I use the ball bounce and turn it on its side and comes in pretty quick and then comes back across and reveals the name. When the intro, you'll see the ball go up in the air like it's a jump ball to start the game and some of those. So I used an element and repurposed it across the package to be able to make it feel cohesive. And because of that, the intention that I put behind that was, okay, it's an on-court asset. What else can I use that happens on the court that I can use to help bring this asset on or animate it in a way that it makes it feel like it's part of our brand, and obviously using the correct colors and some of that kind of stuff too.
With you kind of designing some of that, you know, on your own with maybe minimal graphic assets from other places, how do you keep in line with what's being done through other departments graphically and visually and make sure that, you know, that you kind of have that line that connects everything that's being done within your organization visually?
Quite a bit of our package is pretty consistent and repurposed. So, you know, the package that we use for motion graphics, we use it on game day content. So that's, you know, repurposed over the course of you know, the whole season. So it's not, I'm not changing out a ton there. When it comes to some one-offs, sponsored assets, I do work with one of our graphic designers on the sponsor side who will typically create a look that I'll take and build out from there and animate it or take it and make it look a little bit different. But sometimes I go to them and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. There's a Lucky Rook series that we did. And I went to our graphic designers and said, hey, this is what I'm thinking. I want to take this and put it in 3D and make it look like the player jerseys a little bit. And so they helped me kind of build it out that way, gave me a static, and then I took it in Cinema 4D and extruded it and added some textures and tried to jazz it up a little bit there too. But I also realized I didn't answer your question earlier about how much I'm templating stuff. A lot of the templated stuff that we do is the lower thirds. I use the central graphics panel as much as possible. It's a huge lifesaver for being able to share that with anybody and change out the text in Premiere. It just makes life easy. But creating that, building out that template is largely what I use that essential graphics for one time at the beginning of the season.
How do you, and I think this is an issue a lot of designers have, not just in motion graphics, but how do you get inspiration? What keeps you from things getting stale and bringing new thing and helps you bring new things into your designs?
So can I ask you guys a question?
Absolutely not.
When you're out at the grocery store and you can't find something, how do you go about trying to figure out how you can find what you're looking for?
When I go to the grocery store, how do I find what I'm looking for? Is that the question?
Yeah, if you can't find something.
I go and look for like items, things that might be next to.
Depends on how stubborn I am that day.
Or I ask somebody, I ask somebody in the store, maybe as like a third option.
This is something that I've picked up from taking some of those classes about how to think about, it's a little bit of an awareness thing. I only asked that because this happened to me. I was at the store and I was like, man, I can't find this. Okay, so what are my options? And so I sat there and I pulled out my, I pulled out my phone and I went to Evernote and I was like, okay, let me just jot down all the different things. I know, Garrett, you're giving me weird eyes here thinking I'm crazy. I am crazy. Jot down all the different ways that I could think about going about this. So here's what I came up with. I could retrace my steps. I could approach from a different angle. I could change my perspective. I could, kneel down or go on my tippy toes. I could revisit later. I could ask for help or I could give up. So when you ask me how I go about finding inspiration, a lot of it's day-to-day, like nature, right? Out mowing the lawn and I see something different, or I see how something that I've seen many times over and I see it differently. So just taking that, it sounds a little bizarre and like a different way of thinking, but you could take all six of those things and apply them to if you're in a rut for creativity. Well, can I approach this differently? If I can change, can I change my perspective? Is there a different way that I can look at this and walk around it a different way to be able to find something that makes sense? And maybe I'm a little bit crazy in thinking through some of that stuff, but just seeing how things work in real life. The last example I'll give you is when you are driving down the street and you're, side by side with somebody, and then a turn is coming up and they're going to turn right, but you don't know that. And they start to get really close to your car and you have to like swerve to the left and like, what are you doing? And then they turn. That's anticipation. And that's an animation principle. So anytime people are going to do something, they usually anticipate first. You see it when people jump, they bend down and jump straight up. And when they land, then they also bend their knees because you don't land flat footed. And that's called overshooting. So a lot of what I've learned and what I've picked up in animation designing is actually from real life. It's replicating things that happen to you on a day-to-day basis that if you're aware of how things are in real life, you can actually translate that over into your work in that regard. So I know it was a little bit of a roundabout way of explaining that, but hopefully it was interesting and mind-opening.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense the way you described it. When you first started out, I was like, where is he going with this? But no, I think perspective is huge. And it clearly does not only apply to motion graphics, but I mean, moving to Chicago a few years ago, being a very, you know, multimodal transportation city, like the way that I see the city and these neighborhoods that I go through when I'm on the train is so different than when I'm driving that neighborhood versus like if I go for a walk through that neighborhood, the things you notice and the things that you see and feel, it's like, wait, I've driven through this intersection 100 times and I've never noticed that. And you notice it when you're walking or on the train, like just catching different perspective and looking at things a new way is so, so good creatively. And it comes from doing that in your everyday life.
Yeah. So let me go back and answer your question, probably the way that you thought I was going to answer it initially, which was, I use Pinterest quite a bit to source, design. I also use Vimeo a ton. I know I mentioned before that every week in our group meetings, the group is responsible for providing some sort of inspiration. So I also use what the group shares as inspiration for myself as well. And then there's also a website called Spectacle that I visit, and that's a little bit more geared towards broadcast spots. When I start a project, basically if I get a brief and I'm trying to figure out how I would execute on that brief, one of the things that I do in my ideation process is I use MindNode and try and get outside of the physical direction of that idea, because the first ideas that are going to show up are going to be the physical idea, like the top of mind ideas that almost everybody is going to think of. And I do it in a group typically, and just have a whole bunch of different people go around the room and say, makes me think of, and you start with 2 or 3 different words that you say, makes me think of, and then everybody kind of adds their own words, and then you can build off of that. So if one of the words is compete, you can say, well, that makes me think of a game, or that makes me think of my sister. And then you can keep building branches off of each one of those that directly tie back to that core element, but it gets you outside and thinking a little bit differently. And this is lateral thinking. A lot of people use vertical thinking, which when you think of vertical thinking, you're thinking of math problems. 2 + 2 = 4. 4 + 4 = 8. In order to advance in vertical thinking, everything before it has to be right. Lateral thinking is really about creating opportunities around that to think about things in a different way. So I talked a little bit about changing perspective, and this is a great way to change your perspective and bring it all back together so that you can approach something from a different way. So when it comes to motion graphics, I can identify that way that I'm going to approach something and maybe assign a circle or a square or whatever to be that identifier when I eventually come back and execute. But I also, in one of my conversations with you, Garrett, years ago, you had told me about One Look. I use One Look all the time now. And when I go in there, when I'm not ideating with a group, I use One Look quite a bit when I'm stuck. When I have a word that I'm trying to expand on and I'm looking for synonyms or words that are like it or words that are often appear around it, that's a great resource. It's kind of like a thesaurus on roids or something. And just getting outside of all of, you know, always having to be right. A lot of the times the worst ideas in the beginning are the ones that end up turning out to be the better ideas because it's not the expected outcome. And I think that's one of the biggest things to take away from, hopefully, from this conversation is if you do what's expected, it's not going to stand out as much as if you do what's unexpected. And that's been a huge advantage for how I go about approaching the work and the thought process and what I do at the beginning of the process.
I knew that sounded a little familiar. I was wondering how much of that, kind of came from that conversation we had. I mean, God, probably five-ish years ago now. Because I remember talking about that with you, too, the way that my mind worked when I was doing some trailers and scripts and trying to write all that stuff out, like taking a word, a theme, and just finding any word I could related to it and seeing where it took me. Because, yeah, I've found great success in that, too, and it was more in the writing and scripting realm, but that's really interesting to hear that that's kind of the way you think of video and design as well.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of my process because it's just more fun to, you know, not do the same exact thing. I rail against, probably to my demise, I rail against wanting to do something that somebody else has already done. And if I can't, I don't want to do something somebody else has already done. I want to at least take it and improve on it or put it in a different voice or change or add to it, change the perspective or do something a little bit different. So that process has really allowed me to think outside the box, that and then marry that with the nature side of things, of seeing connections in my day-to-day life of how I, you know, walking around the street or going for a walk and seeing a sewer cover and looking at it and going, ah, oh, that looks a little bit different, but that's kind of cool. And I can't tell you how many times I've been mowing outside thinking about something that I did with the mind node and the preparation and the inspiration, doing something mind-numbing and just letting my mind wander and come back and go, oh, wow, what if this and this came together and connected? And, oh, man, I could create a piece like, oh, what about this and this? And it spurned some pretty cool results, I think.
What do you think, young motion graphic artists, what do you think like the biggest mistake, most common mistake you see in their work is starting out?
I think one of the most difficult things to get right is text. And I think that comes from the fact that we all use text all day, every day, and we see it all the time. So when someone says, hey, go make me a text graphic of this, it's like, well, yeah, I can do that. Of course I can do that. But then when you get down to it, you have kerning, letting, just trying to outline and develop a hierarchy for how you lay out your page. And there's different ways of going about that. But I actually typically encourage people to get into text first, understanding what an ascender and a descender are, the X height, and, you know, kerning and letting, and understanding the difference between a serif and a sans serif, because using different kinds of fonts will have a different impact. How you kern the type, kerning is the spacing between each letter, letting is spacing between each line, and all of that has an impact on legibility and how it reads. So when you see an end tag where people are promoting TuneIn or something like that, you have the date, the time, the sponsor, or where they can tune in or something along those lines. And if you were to lay that out and you use a serif font and then a sans serif font, or they're all the same size, it's harder to read. So just understanding some of those different elements, I think, is a great place that I try and push people to start with.
I think another spot that always tripped me up, you know, in doing graphics was always kind of that transition point. You know, how have you worked with transitions, getting from, you know, one section of a video to another, from, you know, one element of a graphic to another? What are some of the ways you kind of developed that transition point?
One of the things I started doing more recently, to the point earlier about not being a designer first, that I came from the motion video side first, is creating boards so that you can see everything laid out for yourself to begin with. So there's a feature that I shared with you guys that it's called Signature Celtics. I created boards, six boards. It was a 12-second animated piece with a highlight. And being able to see all six boards laid out side by side by side and figuring out what element I'm carrying through from each board to the next, or just totally going differently, because ultimately what you're looking for is contrast. You want to, if you start with something small, next frame you really want it to be big, just to help drive the viewer's eye a little bit. So that's been a huge benefit for me to be able to lay all that out first, because then when I get into the animation process, I'm not guessing or just trying to go from frame to frame and like, oh, I'll make something up here, I'll make something up there. I already have a general idea of what I'm trying to do. And the challenge is, since I am a little bit more animation, motion graphic focused, when I'm designing the boards, I'm like, oh, let me think about how would I animate this? Maybe I can't make that work, or that'll be tough. And it's harder to push yourself that way. But just laying out the boards has been a huge help to me. And I've learned Photoshop and added that. And I don't know about you guys, but when I initially got into it, I used to think that there was no point in me ever learning Illustrator. So I learned Photoshop because it was, you cut out players, you know, that's the one of the primary things that you can do in Photoshop. It's really it's pixel based, so that is a really important need for when you're creating graphics. But using the vector abilities of Illustrator and being able to copy those vectors into Photoshop and maintaining them as smart objects is something that I've picked up and learned that has been really helpful. And being able to use both programs simultaneously and using them for what I need them for is something that I've developed, and that kind of goes hand in hand with creating the boards. I've say probably the last 6 months to a year is that's when I've really started to try and use that to my advantage.
Talk about 3D, and I think you use Cinema 4D primarily, but when did that transition happen and you realized you couldn't do everything you wanted or needed to do in After Effects?
I just thought it was cool. I wanted to extrude things. But really, I think a big part of that was because my lack of design skills. I think the animation, the 2D side of things really plays into illustrators' hands and people who are really good with designing and, you know, even frame by frame animation. And I felt like the benefit of how I came into it is being able to see in three-dimensional space a little bit better than the people that were coming from the design space. So that it was kind of attractive and something that I've wanted to learn for a while. And when you get into it, it's like, okay, well, you have this scene, you need to light it. Great. I can light because I came from a video background. I know what three-point lighting is, and I know if I want to change the lighting that I can make that happen and you know, go from there. Some of the things that were inherent in Cinema 4D, I did have to learn in quite a bit. And once you learn how everything is laid out and understand the hierarchies of everything, it's definitely easier. There's still a lot that I have to learn with Cinema 4D. I've gotten into Redshift so that I can export things quicker, because I was, for that Lucky Rooks graphic that I was talking about, I think it's, 6 or 7 seconds? And I did players' names in the same look overnight, and I would render them on my laptop because I was at home trying to knock this stuff out, and I would render them overnight, and it'd take 8 hours for those to render just because of some of the reflections and different ways that you have, you know, to make it look good through rendering in Cinema 4D. There's just so much to learn, but I really enjoy trying to add that third dimension. I feel like that's the thing that makes the graphics stand out a little bit more and go from there. So it's really been a fun project. And like other people have mentioned on the podcast, I am a little bit of a masochist that I just like the challenge of it and like to push my skill set. So it's been something a lot of my motion graphics background is stuff that I've learned and done on my own time. And that really gets into, you know, when I mentioned, when you were asking how I split my time, a lot of it is at night. And, you know, when we had our second kid, I took a class. I told my wife I volunteered for, giving him a bottle at night, and I'd stay up till like 11:30 to give him the bottle, but I was really doing my class and I was helping everybody out there. But it's, you know, just trying to find time to do something that I enjoy doing.
I think one of the things that, you know, catches my ear when you talk about it is those like 8 hour renders. And motion graphics is something that can be really time consuming, not only on the render side, but just in general. How along the way have you kind of found efficiencies and better ways to do things and started to really improve your time management with graphics. Do you have any tips that you might be able to share on that front?
Yeah, I'm a stickler for keyboard shortcuts. That's one of the first things I typically harp on, whether it's in Premiere or After Effects. When you're getting into it, the technical end usually comes first. And the reason I harp on keyboard shortcuts is because the ultimate goal is to be able to move at the speed of thought. So the faster you can move and execute without needing to go into your drop-down menu or use your mouse, the better off you'll be. And outside of that, I have some scripts that I use from AE Scripts. Ease Copy is a big one that I use all the time, which basically you can copy, you know, up to 3 keyframes linearly and then go to a different set of keyframes and paste it, and it'll paste the exact same interpolation, and it wouldn't paste the keyframes, it pastes the interpolation of how the graph looks. So there's definitely a lot of tools, and I've acquired quite a few over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. So the list is quite lengthy, but my layout in After Effects, I've totally changed my layout to make things more efficient. So I know exactly where things are and they're accessible. And I have a 2-screen layout. So on my right screen is just my primary viewport. And on the left side is my timeline at the bottom, my effects panels, my all the plugins that I use most frequently that are easily accessible so that I can just go up and hit the button and make it as easy as possible on myself. So I'd say the layout is a big deal as well.
You got into like scripts and plugins and some of those things a little bit there, but you know, I think that is one thing that I've seen a lot of change in, is just kind of the investment of these outside companies giving people tools to kind of template out and at least give them elements to improve. I mean, I remember when I was in college, like we had Trapcode Particular, and I thought it was like, I use that on everything because I was like, oh, hell yeah, a plugin. Like, this is great. I have something to help me out. But you've seen that really just grow. The industry around After Effects and motion graphics has grown. You know, how much is that a good thing? And how much, in your opinion, have you seen people kind of use some of those as a crutch?
It's definitely something that you can use as a crutch. And I think, you know, I still use Trapcode to this day. The difference in how I use it today versus years ago is that I create all my own stuff. I use the plugin well enough. So if I want to create something, I create a sprite and I bring in the graphic that I want to use in particular and use it that way, because I have a direct intention of how I'm going to use the plugin, as opposed to wanting to use the plugin because it's cool and it can do something that's how I want to use it. But you know, I think it's just a matter of understanding that when you get in and use a plugin, they do make it easy. They have presets for you to make it easy to get you some quick wins, as people like to say. And then it's on you to understand how it's working and be interested to approach the program and figure out how you can manipulate it to your advantage. Because at the end of the day, when I am creating things, I can download templates from Envato or do all sorts of other things, but it's not going to be our brand. And that is the thing that I think is super important to highlight, is that yes, you can use presets. Yes, you can use any downloaded templates, and that should get you started. And it's incumbent on you to push the envelope so that when it comes time for you to be able to build something that is cohesive with your brand, that you're able to do that.
I know that you know, I say only, but you've only been doing this at like a higher level for maybe the last like 5-ish years, kind of as you said. But how have you seen kind of motion graphics change, the programs, you know, the way that people are looking at motion graphics? How have you kind of seen that change over the last 5-10 years? And what do you think is next?
It's hard because, you know, when I got into Cinema 4D, I feel like I've fallen so far behind, even after I learned it initially, because of all the advancements and how quickly things have changed. A couple months ago, Unreal Engine was announced that you could do graphics in real time, and people are starting to play with that. You know, Blender is another option outside of Cinema 4D is a free option. I think artificial intelligence and machine learning is going to have a huge role in the next couple of years too, of iterating on graphics and being able to take a graphic and give you other options based on that graphic. And Adobe using Sensei technology is advancing really quickly as well. And I think all the third parties have been just a benefit to what Adobe is doing and the limits that they're trying to push. And I have never gotten into some node-based editors, but Cinema 4D has made some huge advancements in node-based materials, and Redshift is a little bit more node-based and trying to wrap my head around some of that. And you know, we also use a tool called Sapphire from BorisFX that is node-based, and you can incorporate that with Mocha and do tracking and roto, some of those kinds of things. So you can go in 10 different directions with all this stuff, right? Like even within motion graphics, and you just kind of have to pick and choose where you want your skill set to lie.
When you talk about node-based, you know, what do you mean by that?
There's a way to access nodes within After Effects. So each layer could be a node, but the benefit of nodes is to use it for procedural elements. So it's like you get to the end of a process and like, I wish this looked a different way, or I wish I could put this effect on it. Nodes are make it a lot easier to be able to do that. It's scary though, I will say that, just looking at some of the nodes, just because I don't have a background in it, and it's definitely something I'm on my short list of things that I need to brush up on and understand. With that list is super long, so all things that I'm working on that I need to focus. But I guess that's a great thing to highlight. I think one of the biggest challenges for Brock kind of asked me earlier for young professionals in the industry. It is so easy today, and I'm seeing it so much more with COVID, of flavor of the day, waking up going, what am I going to learn today, without having a dedicated path or understanding of what you want to learn. And that focus is vital to developing your skill set. In the moment, a lot of times you will feel like you're falling behind, but sticking with a certain program, sticking with a certain, you know, if you're going to learn text for After Effects, stick with text for a month or 6 weeks and learn as much as you can about text before you move on. You're gonna come away with such a better base and an understanding of how all that stuff works, as opposed to doing text one day, doing Photoshop another day, and just waking up and saying, oh, this person posted this tutorial today. I'm just gonna follow along that path, because it's just much harder to develop a skill set. Because one of the things that I've learned in design is repetition is king, and I try and use that in how I try and develop my skill set. The more you repeat, it's like practice, the more you repeat what you do and reinforce the good skills, the better you're going to get at that certain skill.
Yeah, I think the last thing that I have, Justin, is just, you know, for people who are getting into this industry, I think, you know, your last piece of advice was great, but if you could give one piece of general advice on getting into graphics and one actual technical program-based or skill-based piece of advice, what would each of those be?
I'm a big believer in design-centric video, and I think that's a big reason why I've tried to build the skill set that I have today over the last handful of years that I have, because it's going to be prevalent, and you're going to have a more versatile skill set being able to communicate, even if it's as simple as text, because that translates over, you know, Premiere. You see what Adobe is doing. If you follow what Adobe is doing and all the implementations and all the capabilities that they are making available in all the different programs, follow that path and try and learn those skills so that you can stay up to date. The design aspect of video is becoming more and more prevalent, especially in social media, where people have their audio turned off more than half the time. You still have to communicate something, you know, in your edit. So that's, I guess, that side of it. And the other side of it is After Effects is a great place to start, because I think, you know, seeing Photoshop and how things are laid out, people are used to layers and seeing how that works, and just playing around with After Effects, watching some tutorials and getting up to speed. And there's no shame in copying tutorials when you're just learning. That's the best way to learn, is to copy what someone else is doing. You eventually do need to get out of that that mindset, but you do need to learn the skills first before you do. And I'll end by trying to bring home that the circles that I've mentioned a few times. If you pause for a second and take a look at your computer, look out your window, there's probably a house, an object, a light or something like that, that you can see in front of you. And you see the full picture, but what you're really looking at is a bunch of shapes that make up that picture. And so chances are you can distill those images down into either a circle, square, or a triangle. And learning how to see the world in a simplified way is a secret to creating something that will help you deliver an unexpected result.
So we'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.